So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Steve Abernathy, co-founder of SquareTrade. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Adrian. Thanks for having me.
So, Steve, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and also a little bit about the work that you do?
Yeah, great. So, I'm one of the founders of SquareTrade. My background, I was an architectural engineer, so built buildings for a few years, and decided to change careers, so went to business school after about 3 years working as an engineer, and hit the reset button, worked at a large management consulting firm called McKinsey, which is sort of an extension of business school, worked in a bunch of industries, and then 1999 came around, and that was really the call to be a creator with a lot of flexibility. So I met a colleague both from business school at McKinsey, and we decided to move to the Bay Area, San Francisco, and try to start a company and raise capital. And so that was really the progression of really not even a clear idea of what we were going to do, just knowing we didn't want to miss out on a unique opportunity in time.
Okay.
So we founded SquareTrade in 99 with some confidence we could do something, but not necessarily a crystal clear idea that we'd be transforming the warranty industry.
Right.
Flash forward to today, what SquareTrade does is we've taken this service that most people have experienced in a really negative way, called warranties for consumer electronics. So you're in line at your retailer, and you're offered at the last minute, often in an aggressive fashion. Do you want a warranty to protect that phone, that computer, that television, with no ability to research and no ability to understand what you're buying?
Right.
And so we said that's a crummy industry on so many realms, and it was actually a large industry in many realms. And we said, hey, this is something that can be transformed if we take a long-term view of trends in retail and how technology can be used and really think about service in a very different way. And so we set about to really transform the industry. And it's been a long haul, but we're really making traction now.
Fantastic. Now, I mean, when you got it started, I mean the way that the company's evolved, I mean, my understanding is that you've made the company's focus, it's one of its sole focuses, or for Kaya, to be correct, I think, is customer happiness. I mean, why have you done sort of that? I mean, because that's warranty and insurance and those sort of things have all traditionally been about sort of process and contracts and terms and conditions and stuff. But you've just gone, customer happiness, that's our focus. Why did you decide to do that? Is that because that's part of the transformative sort of journey, as it were?
Well, I think it was a low-hanging fruit. This was an industry.
Okay.
Let me tell you a little of context of why we really approached this very differently. The industry was really built around a B2B, business-to-business service, where third parties provided a white-labeled, an unbranded service for a retailer to offer to customers.
Right.
And because of this metric, they had no desire or no reason to delight consumers. Their desire was to keep costs as low as possible, to have you forget you have your warranty, to have you lose it in a shoebox,
right,
and to wear you down with call after call after call.
Right.
No guarantee. So the consumer experience was terrible. The cost was high. And this became our whole point of view to your question of how do we take a category,
right,
which is almost universally dreaded and despised, or considered a necessary evil at best, and how do we turn it on its head? And so we believed that there are multiple things that we needed to do if we wanted to create a long-term great service. And it all started with the customer.
Right.
We had to say, well, as a consumer, what do I want? And we kind of built it around multiple, pillars of what would be a great consumer service. And so the first one was, underlying it all, is it had to be researchable.
Right.
In the old way of doing it, you had no idea of what you were buying. But anything you buy nowadays, whether it's a product or a restaurant or a hotel, you can research.
Yeah.
And so we said, hey, it needed to be branded and researchable. So whether or not you know who SquareTrade is, if you Google SquareTrade, you can find other people's experience.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's how any great service or product lives, is you actually read a review of what some anonymous person has expressed about the service. So that was core to us. Second thing is, we said we want to treat a claim or a customer experience as a branding experience,
okay,
and a validation experience, not a cost center. So obviously we have to create a service that can be cost effective, and that means we have to do all sorts of things to lower costs and how we fix products. But we want every customer experience to be one to validate, to say, I feel smart in having bought SquareTrade.
Okay.
And with that, we'll create a lifetime customer, as opposed to just trying to profit off of that individual purchase, or like the old guys did, is basically try to avoid a claim.
Right.
Because they had no incentive to have a claim. Because we actually have a branded experience, if you could actually delight a customer, you could then turn that customer into a shining light on how SquareTrade has really created a new approach to warranties. So that really was a fundamental aspect to say, if we can wow customers, they will then convert that back to either being a loyal customer long term or sharing that experience in a public social online setting through reviews.
Right.
And with those two principles, a branded and researchable and consumer focus, then we used built technology and thought through all aspects of the service experience to say, what will wow a customer? What will encourage them to share that with other people? And that really informed the entire architecture of how we started SquareTrade and how we've evolved it.
Okay. Now, I mean, does that mean that because you're trying to basically make a traditional sector, which was uncool, kind of a bit more cool, as it were, does that mean that the start was always is always going to be harder because you have to work against all the inertia in the traditional sector? Would that be fair?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we were dealing with almost relaunching a category.
Right.
That said, a lot of people say, well, I'm only experienced this category in a negative setting. And so we needed to say, how do you build authenticity and trust?
Yes.
To say, this is not the service that you were offered 5-10 years ago or you heard about with your friends. So that required tremendous investment. In many ways, our initial years of building the service were about, how do you give consumers, before they buy, the ability to see that this isn't the old type of warranty?
Yeah.
And how do you then, in every aspect of touching the customer, give them validation that this is something that is not going to run away and hide from them, but be there when they need it?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really where we built the all aspects of product development. Is, you think about a warranty, unlike a TV, which you can turn on and see that it works, a warranty you don't really experience if it works until a year, 2 years down the road.
Yeah.
When you actually have a claim, and then it's not just about the price of the warranty, but what kind of hell am I being put into to get my item fixed?
Sure.
And so what we've said is, how do you validate and make tangible a service before you ever use it?
Yeah.
And that comes through amplifying the experience of people who do have claims right off.
Yeah.
And turn that into a way that you can transform people. Second thing is how do you – one analogy I says, we created an ATM versus a bank teller. How do you actually tell someone, or an e-ticket versus a paper ticket in air travel?
Uh-huh.
How do you say, hey, look, we're not going to give you this thing that you're going to forget in a shoebox. We're going to give you multiple forms of immediate trust to say, this is how you find and file a claim.
Right.
This is where you don't have to worry about this paper. You can go to SquareTrade.com anytime, cancel a warranty, transfer a warranty, get service without having to worry about a 17-digit long number you've forgotten.
Yeah.
And so all these things are ways that we've said, this is the first aspect of trust.
Yeah.
Make someone feel comfortable they can find it before they even need it.
Yeah.
And then build technology and service attributes so that when you do need it, it then is a great experience versus a crummy one.
Well, I guess in a way is that what you're doing is you're saying you're looking at the whole sort of, if you like, the traditional experience, and you're saying, like, okay, there's stuff that the customer would naturally experience as being difficult, whether it's keeping the piece of paper, remembering the policy number, doing all those different things. You're saying, look, those are the things we can make that easy for people, so we can take that sort of that pain away from them, and then hopefully that brings them closer to us, and then all we've got to do is just deliver and make our service and process easy and believable and trustworthy and delightful, I guess.
Exactly. And the other thing about the industry, which we found atrocious and an opportunity for us, is there's no principle of service guarantee, no principle of speed guarantee,
right,
where before we came along. And so we early on, for traditional electronics, say, hey, we're going to give you a 5-day service guarantee. If we don't fix your item in 5 days,
yeah,
we're still fix it or replace it or cash you out for it, but we will give you your warranty price back. And that's another aspect of making tangible a promise that then we built systems around to make sure we deliver, and usually we do it in a day.
Right.
But this actually was another aspect of, again, tangibilizing a service promise and then setting expectations both internally and externally of what you're going to get when you do have a claim.
Yeah.
And that's evolved to be much faster, but again, that's a business principle, which then informed the entire way that we built the business and worked with suppliers and worked with third parties to how we fix items and deal with customers when there's a real claim.
Okay. And so have things, I mean, you've been around now for, what is it, 15 years now?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it must have been a great and interesting and probably quite challenging sort of time to be in business, given that you've gone through a dot-com boom, a financial crisis, a big recession, and then we're sort of coming out the other side. I mean, so how have things changed for the company over that time? And what are you doing differently now to when you first started?
Well, I think there's multiple, you know, generic things that we've done that I think are relevant to a lot of companies. I think the first thing is we run the business from the very early stage as a, you know, business that had to live on its own. It couldn't live on external funding. It had to be a real business that could sustain itself.
Right.
And early on, and in the U.S. with the bubble of venture capital, a lot of people raised a lot of money and sustained based on, you know, continued access to external capital.
Yeah.
So they built great services, but they were never profitable.
Right.
And we early on realized that we were not going to be able to do that, or so we raised money and we got to profitability in the, you know, after about 3-4 years.
Right.
Not uber profitability, but enough so that we could be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And then we managed our business always in this realm of, we don't want to be profitable in the sense that we're generating a whole bunch of cash, but we want to keep control of our destiny.
Yes.
So we'll only grow to the degree to which we can generate capital through the business to grow. So that's one principle that we have. The second, though, we realized is that, you know, building a real business is hard. And so you had to really think long-term and invest long-term. And I think that's one great thing about any entrepreneur is most big companies are impatient.
Yeah.
And won't have the discipline to say, look, this is a huge industry. It's a $20 billion+ industry. It's going to take us 10 years to get to a point where we can have built the consumer trust and the technology and the collective infrastructure to earn, you know, win a Tesco in the UK or win a Costco or a Sam's Club or a Staples in the US.
Yeah.
And that long-term marathoning approach has also been driven by this disciplined approach to capital and this sort of methodical investment to say, well, where do we think trends are going in retail, and how are we going to invest for that? So I think that's another thing that has been useful for us. And the last one is retail has changed dramatically.
Yeah.
I mean, you retailers have struggled, and we made a bet that said that retail is moving from what we call assisted sales, meaning a lot of people in the store selling you something, to unassisted, whether that be purely online, to a relatively, you know, low associate in a store situation. And in that bet, all these principles we've talked about is how do you create a service or product that can sell itself versus be sold. And so that's the other thing that we focused on, is really creating a service that's a great service that can thrive in an unassisted setting and serve a partner need.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was interesting against the sort of the last point that you made. You talk about the sort of assisted experience and then moving to sort of lower or less people in stores, where it's more of just they're facilitating more than anything else. What's interesting, because you talk about warranties, and I had a bit of a disaster with my laptop last week. It was quite a new laptop, actually, and I spilt coffee on it. And I was very, very lucky. Well, I took it to the Apple store, and they said, it's toast. It cost more to repair it than to replace it. But then I was very, very lucky, as my home insurance had added a facility on there to cover those sort of eventualities. And the home insurance company has been brilliant, and they picked up the laptop today. I've got a replacement already. But what I've noticed about the going into the Apple store is that actually they have a lot of people in there, but actually the people don't sell, they just serve, and then therefore they sell by serving. And I think that's an interesting kind of model, which some retailers are also finding really quite challenging as well.
Yeah, it's really been a struggle for retail in general, and certain things that would have sold historically do not sell. Mm-hmm. And I think you also bring, from a trend perspective, at least specific to my industry, that's benefited is your experience. We most of what we buy now in electronics has moved from, you know, heavy inanimate objects,
yeah,
to mobile devices that we spill coffee on and drop on the sidewalk. And with so, a warranty or protection is actually more relevant, because you might be have been cynical of the fact that your item might not function, but the fact that we're klutzes and the fact that we hand our iPhones and tablets to our children, and our study that something like $3 billion a year in electronics are destroyed by our pets, who pee on them and chew them and spill, you know, vases of water on them. So anyhow, I think that's another trend. But I think the whole aspect of how do you then take your point of you're a point of pain, your laptop is your life as a writer, and you can't be without that for 3 weeks or unknown time.
Yeah.
And so that's been our approach, to say the old way was, you know, SOL. Mm-hmm. And most protection plans in the past didn't cover the klutz and all of us.
Yes.
With a cup of coffee that is usually within 4 inches of your laptop.
Yes.
And how do you take that crummy experience and turn it into a great one?
Yeah.
Whether it be, you know, overnight fixing, whether it be, in the case of cell phones, we actually allow people to actually fix them same day, where we'll send you into a shop to get it fixed and reimburse you for that. So it's really about speed, because these devices now are no longer, you know, discretionary. They're core to our businesses and core to our personal lives.
I think that's fair. And moving on a little bit, I mean, recently I've been spending quite a little bit of time thinking and sort of writing a little bit about customer loyalty. And given all those kind of trends and things, do you think that loyalty is changing? And if so, how is it changing? What's your experience of that? Or is it that our ability to generate loyalty is just different?
I think there's a few things that are a little bit different. I think, first of all, there are certain services that have changed loyalty. So, for example, Hotwire is a travel experience. Yeah. You'll book wherever they put you. Mm-hmm. And so I know when I go into whatever random hotel I get that they know I'm probably the worst possible customer because I did not choose that hotel. I was assigned that as the best price.
Yeah.
That said, within that experience, loyalty is driven by predictability of service. And predictability comes in not just my repeat use of the service for something like an Amazon or a Costco or a retailer that I love, but through other people's collective reviews. So now my loyalty is driven by what the other people say about it, not just my one experience. And so I think that loyalty is now almost a collective loyalty. I've used this experience, but do I still trust it based on what other people are doing? So I do believe that the social, whether you call it social or listening to what other people say and do, uh-huh. is actually driving, you could love a restaurant, but if you see that it's got bad reviews, you might not go back.
Yeah.
So our whole view is, and again, back to my point of view is you've got to build trust in a customer every time they repeat use your service.
Yes.
And so that comes through obviously delighting them when they have the experience. I still believe giving a great user experience is and turning bad to good is still, I think, good old fashioned good sense. Because people will refer you and reuse you if they have a great experience.
Yeah.
We have customers obviously with lots of warranties because they've had a great experience. But that said, with all this information out there, I still believe consumers are reevaluating services and products every time they purchase.
Yes.
Based on what other people say. And I think that probably translates to almost any category.
I think that's true. So it's not just about what we think and what we experience, but also about what other people think and other people experience. And that's
exactly.
I guess the impact is that we become based on what other people think and other people experience. We can actually grow to distrust or not necessarily rely on our own opinion as well.
Exactly. You think about there's a famous brand meltdown in the U.S. I'm not sure if it translates to the U.K. A brand called Lululemon, which is an athletic gear, really really high end athletic gear, and they had a snafu with some yoga pants that turned out to be see through, and I actually don't know what the brand is, but it's really imploded.
Right.
And from this one event, which maybe. You probably didn't buy yoga pants, but you might not ever shop there again because of that event.
Yes.
And why is that? You might have loved that product, loved their design. So it just shows how important really delivering to the collective audience is mm-hmm. compared to just you as the individual.
Okay. So what's Square Trade's plans for the future apart from world domination? I mean, where does Square Trade go from here? I mean, it's like you've done really well in the US, and you're starting to, I mean, and is it just international growth, or are you you've got plans to move into other areas?
I think we're focus is a key thing for us, and thankfully our world is a big world, and so while we've got lots of traction and we've got many of the largest retailers in the US and the UK now working with us, we have lots of room to grow. And just within our existing partners, it's one warranty at a time. You can't take your eye off the ball. And I think that's another thing that a lot of businesses do is they win a partner and then they're like, what's next? And then they lose their way. So I think to us, quarters is customer obsession. And there's just so much innovation. The other thing about us is innovation is core to how we've disrupted in one business. But we have to have the target on our back to say we have to out-innovate ourselves continuously. And so that's a core tenet to us. Yeah. So growth is important to us. Growth within our category is enormous. I think we could grow, 5000X and still be within the same category. So that's number one. I think international growth is a big thing for us. So we have a European presence and we're investing heavily to grow there. Mm-hmm. But again, we're picking, you know, we're not trying to go to every place at the same time. So methodically, and our business is a real logistically complex business. And so for us to grow, we can't just be in India and South America and Finland at the same time. We have to methodically build, repair, logistics. We have to have really strong call center logistics. We have to have very, very strong local expertise and then build the trust in consumers that makes them, again, like this whole conversation. So we have a lot of growth in the future, but it's going to be a methodical growth region by region before we try to go do auto warranties or home warranties.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a bit like, I don't know if you're familiar with the phenomenon of slow cooking in the States. You ever come across that?
You talk like the egg, I forget the name of it, the 8-hour cook in your roast.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a bit like that. So it produces, it might take a while, but it produces a sumptuous kind of like feast. So it's almost like you do it in a very diligent, sort of like slow, methodical way. And I like that because it's not just about the growth then, is it? It's about sustainability. And it's about service and it's about experience and it's about the customers. But also, yeah, it's about building an even bigger and more stable sort of foundation for the business, for the future. It's building for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I fundamentally believe, well, our customer is both big retailers, but it's got to be the individual consumer.
Yeah.
And the only way that loyalty, to your point, is valuable,
yeah,
is you can't lose your way.
Yeah.
And so I think so many businesses say, I've won a big channel, what's next?
Yeah.
And then even though they were great at one point, they start to lose it. So anyhow, I think fundamental to us is we have to always out-innovate ourselves and always obsess about what's the next thing you can do for the consumer and what thing you're spilling coffee on.
Brilliant. Steve, that's been really interesting, but I always end these interviews on one final question, and that is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
I think I've already done a methodical job of plugging SquareTrade throughout this entire discussion, so thank you. Thanks for the attention. I think if you do drop your iPhone and Samsung or spill your coffee, know that SquareTrade's a better solution. If you buy something new, take a SquareTrade.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I think I might need to consider that, because I know that if I did it anywhere else but in my office or at home, then I wouldn't be covered. So I probably have a need. But anyway, Steve, I wanted to thank you again for your time today. That's been great.
Well, thank you, Adrian. It's been great talking to you.